let me in. Shibop, shibop. I want to be closer to you. Shibop, shibop. Open up your soul. Shibop, shibop. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. Music is something that I enjoy. I know a lot of musicians, a lot of really good musicians, and I've got one of them here right now, and you've heard me play some of his stuff. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome the shapely and talented Mark Bell. Hello, how you doing?
Oh, Marilyn, it's great to be here, and I'm doing pretty darn well. Your songs this morning helped motivate me and motivate me over here to the station, and I'm always happy here to be at KPOO.
Well, I'm going to start by asking you, when did you become a musician?
Well, I think I started playing piano when I was probably five or so.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother was kind of a church lady, and so she was giving us lessons on the piano at home. And,
okay.
And I grew up here in San Francisco, and, I'm a child of the 60s, so there was music everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I was even in the school system, there was music to be done, and there were summer camps, and there was free music.
Mm-hmm.
The symphony used to train young musicians in a summer workshop that was free.
Well, they still do.
Yeah, yeah. So that, so we were getting it from all sides. We were getting it from our families. We were getting it from the community.
Mm-hmm.
A party used to be people coming by and telling, maybe they were good at telling jokes, or they could do a card trick, or they could sing a song at the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So, the variety show wasn't just something on TV. It was something we were living back then. So music has just always been around, to get back to your question.
Now, you say that, so your grandma was in the church. So does that mean that you did ungodly music as you got older, or was she pretty liberal in her...
She didn't see me play CBGBs. She didn't live that long. And not that, I don't know. I have some ideas about godliness in regards to music, which I think it's very close to God in any form.
But it was like secular music.
Yeah, but, I was in the Calvary Presbyterian Choir and in the 60s, and it was a youth choir, and we were like, we're the Grateful Living instead of it was our reaction against the negativity of the Grateful Dead. So we were already going for it at that point. But she knew I both had I had hymns and boogie woogie in me from an early age.
So then what musical instrument did you decide to play once you became an adult?
I was given a trumpet at school. You used to be able to get instruments. You still kind of can now. Oh, and I didn't learn the cello, so I got a trumpet when I was probably eight or so.
Mm-hmm.
And my father had always wanted a trumpet. He was a Depression baby. And so he was like, yeah, you're definitely going to play a trumpet. And
uh-huh.
When I was 10, my parents gave me enough money to buy a Bach cornet from a traditional jazz player, Ev Ferret.
Oh, okay.
And I still have that horn. It's a beautiful Bach Mount Vernon cornet.
I don't think I've ever seen you play a wind instrument.
Oh, I'm okay on the brass,
Okay.
I play the telephone the best, but I play some piano, and then I play anything with valves that is a brass instrument.
Okay.
But flugelhorn, a lot of flugelhorn on this upcoming show, because it's our good friend Bert Bacharach, who's a fan of brass and strings and all sorts of things.
Okay, well, that's a good segue. What's the show?
The show is coming up this Friday, and it's the Red Room Orchestra, which is a collective of musicians, in this case about 31 people, and from ages 17 to 91. It's at the chapel. It's a tribute to Bert Bacharach, who's a hero to all
uh-huh,
of us, and
uh-huh.
continues to educate and enlighten us with the 1,000-plus songs he's written. So that's coming up this Friday. We're going to do 29 of those songs.
So a lot of our listeners are young and don't really know what the Bert Bacharach library is. I know, but maybe you want to say some of them and so they can go, oh, I've heard that.
Yeah, well, that's you know, there's a lot of them. I think, you know, most people have heard Do You Know the Way to San Jose? The name of our program is What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love.
Okay.
You know, there's Alfie. There's, you know, Baby, It's You. Mm-hmm. Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. What's New, Pussycat? Mm-hmm. You know, This Guy's in Love with You. Walk On By. You know, One Less Bell to Answer. I Say a Little Prayer for You. I don't know. If you haven't heard any of those songs, you should call me up and I will hang out with you and help you listen to stuff.
They might have heard the songs but didn't know they were Burt Bacharach. Like,
right.
For example, that song Always Something There to Remind Me. Like,
sure.
I didn't know it was a Burt Bacharach song because I'd always heard it. I only ever heard it in the 80s. So.
Sure, by Naked Eyes.
Yeah.
You know, which is a remake, which is, you know.
Yes.
And so, young people, if you aren't hearing a Bacharach song, more likely than not, you're hearing somebody transmute what they learned from Burt Bacharach.
Mm-hmm.
So that applies to the Beatles. It applies to the Rolling Stones. It applies to Adele.
Mm-hmm.
It applies to, you know, a lot of the backing beats you're going to hear out, you know, throughout hip hop. So it's deep, deep, deep stuff. He was a master musician. He was a very savoir faire kind of character, great looking man, and a genius, and incredibly prolific. And he grew out of a period in America where there were professional songwriters like Carole King.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it goes as far as
Lauren Hero,
you know, Lou Reed was a professional songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
People used to show up at work and they'd write 5 songs a day and they'd hope they'd go somewhere. So the most successful, I think, songwriter of, you know, probably the most successful of the 20th century is good old Burt Bacharach.
Really?
Yeah. If you think about it, I mean, 1,000 plus songs, over 500, you know, like notable recordings of these songs.
Okay.
And I think, you know, it's, you know, you could argue that, oh, well, maybe the Beatles songs got covered more, but he's got to be in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so clearly you're a Burt Bacharach fan from way back in the day. But since you have people from 17 to, what did you say, 91 or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did the 17-year-old even know these songs? Or were they like, wow, this is cool?
They were all over it. Yeah, no, okay. We have Maisie Strauss, who's the daughter of Pete Strauss, who plays in our band. And she's singing They Long to Be Close to You. And I think very poignantly, she's also singing I'll Never Fall in Love Again, which is a very mature perspective at 17.
Well,
you know,
no matter how young you are, like you start getting heartbreak at 13. So it makes sense that, you know, at 17, you could just be like, I'll never fall in love again.
There's a reason you cry when you're born. You know, that's for sure.
So talk a little bit about the venue.
The venue's the Chapel, which is at 777 Valencia Street. It's kind of home court. You know, there's a few clubs in town like the Chapel or the Great American that we feel very comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just right there, you know, on Valencia Street. There's food there as well. The program's going to start at 7:30, and it's going to be one complete show, a long set of beautiful music.
And who are some of the other musicians? Because you said there are 31 of them.
Well,
one name.
You know, there's myself. There's Tom Ayers, who's a guitar slinger. There's Pete Strauss, who I mentioned. There's Dina McAbee, who's a string player and a singer. She's coming from Berlin.
Uh-huh.
Robert Lopez, who's playing percussion. Nico Wenner from Oxbow, as well as Eugene Robinson. Eugene Robinson's daughter, Ruby, is going to sing a song. She's going to sing Tower of Strength, which is a huge hit.
Okay.
We are honored to have Petra Hayden, who's one of our recent additions to the Red Room Orchestra, coming up from Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
to sing some songs with us. Bart Davenport, who's always with us all the time. Adrian DeLanda, beautiful singer, great musician, educator. Karina Denike, same goes. Meryl Press, same goes. The West Coast Spiritual Corinthians, who taught me what I know about gospel and a lot of what I know about rock and roll and pop music.
Okay.
Peter Case, great songwriter, is going to join us on a tune. Little Roger Clark, who has a lot of history here in the Bay Area with both his own acts and the Goosebumps. Jewel Robinow from any number of bands, including the Black Crowes. And then we got a horn section. I don't know, 6 horns? Carol Ashby, Scott Larson, Rob Ewing, Amber Lamprick, Tom Greaser, Danny Cow. And then Louis Patzner's on cello, and my son is flying in from New York to play some triangle. I have a 22-year-old son.
What?
Yeah. Check him out on Spotify.
I had no idea that you had procreated.
I did.
Wow.
Happily.
There's a little mini you running around.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. So say again when and what time is the show?
Show's going to be at 7:30. 777 Valencia Street.
Oh, okay.
We've made the possibility of seeing the show as favorable for people as possible in regards to, you know, how it's going to be out there for you. So it should be something everybody can attend, and we suggest you attend. And it will go for about 2.5 hours. It's a very serious bit of business, and we have a great DJ, Led Teddy, who's here in the Bay Area, works on a lot of the internet sites, and he'll be doing some rare deep backrack tracks as well.
And you said you've made it you try to make it as friendly as possible. So does that, like, what's the age range for people who can come? What's the youngest you would say should be able to walk through the door?
It's, I don't think there's anything anybody shouldn't see.
Oh, okay.
if you can stand up and handle yourself, be you old or young, you're invited to this thing. If you bring the baby, make sure the baby likes music. That's
right,
all I ask.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And what are the COVID protocols for the show?
COVID protocols are, you know, I think it's up to everybody's sensitivities and sensibilities. So,
yeah,
you know, we certainly test ourselves, and I think the venues on that front are working with that.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's up to people in regards to masks.
Right.
I don't believe the venue has a strict masking protocol, but I know that everybody who works in this business these days certainly has within their members and their staffs. So
okay.
as much as I can speak to that.
And if people want to find out more about the show or about what you're doing, what do they do?
They can look at chapelsf.com, chapelsf.com,
okay.
And or you could look at the Red Room Orchestra. .com as well. And
the Red Room Orchestra?
No, Red Room Orchestra,
okay.
Excuse me. Yes, you go to redroomorchestra.com or the chapel, or chapel SF. No, I got to get the out of there. chapelsf.com. And that'll have information about tickets for the show and more information about who we are and what we do.
Okay. Now, say once again, one more time, what day of the week is this happening?
It is Friday.
This Friday.
This very coming Friday, the end of this week.
Okay.
Yeah, just a minute from now. Friday. It's Friday, August 4th, 7:30, 777 Valencia Street. The Red Room Orchestra and a cast of, you know, many.
Excellent. Well, then, and you said before I went on the air that we could give away a pair of tickets?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
If you love KPOO, pardon
me. Thank you.
Yes, never say that again. but if you love KPOO, as I do, just call up and say, I love KPOO radio. And come Christmas time, I'm going to donate.
All right. Thank you. So, Mark Capel, I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah.
And people of Earth, if you'd like to win a pair of tickets to go see all these amazing musicians at the chapel, just give me a call here at 415-346-5376. Just give me a call right now.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just to let love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love.
We have our winner, we have our winner.
But for everyone, and Lord, we don't need another mountain. Love, sweet love. It's
Rufus Wonder and the Additions, San Francisco Treat, that's Under the Moon. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO, San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, I'll give you a hint. The French had a name for it. I'd like to welcome Don Malcolm. How you doing?
I'm great, Marilyn. It's great to hear your voice. And I wanted to say that it's always such a pleasure to hear what you're playing. And I just was curious, I've been following the fact that there's a Stax 7 CD set of demos that's just coming out. And I'm wondering whether you're going to work that into your rotation at some point over the rest of the summer, because it's fabulous stuff, and I think it would fit really well with the stuff that you play on your show.
Well, all I can say to that is if it magically appeared here in the station, it would somehow find its way on the air.
I think there's a hint there for me.
but the hint,
well,
we'll
see what we can do about that.
Okay.
It really is wonderful stuff, and I'm looking forward to, there was such a proliferation of material that was done there that I just think it would be fabulous to see that get sort of mixed in with the things that we already know so well. So I'll consider your hint there.
Yeah, well, I've been turned on to a lot of good music by a lot of listeners. So, like, my favorite one thus far was someone turned me on to Jackie Shane, and I've never looked back. It was just, Jackie Shane is amazing. She was, just a trailblazer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But we're not here to talk about music.
No,
we're here to talk about the...
Although we could do that.
We could.
Fun, but yes, I'm all set. I've become busy again. I think we should probably, the pandemic obviously had a huge effect on movie theaters and, of course, on, crazy guys like me doing our very specialized shows. But we are back in action, and I think what's happening in 2023, when I count it up here and I got tired writing it out so I would be able to remember it all. This is our busiest year ever. We've already done a show at the Roxy in April where we didn't do noir. We did all the other films that got kicked to the curb by the Calle de Cinema, 18 of them in April, which went over really well as part of the film club that we do in the screening room there. And so now we're moving into a period in August where we'll do a show I've wanted to do for years. I was kind of hoping it would happen with somebody else, but people kept saying, you need to do it, Don, so we were doing it, and thank goodness that we have a chance to go to the Four Star Theater and work with Adam Bergeron and his folks as they start taking up some of the slack for what we're dealing with that tragic situation with our wonderful Castro Theater. We have some more places that will come online hopefully to save us from, the wasteland that people are promising us with the Castro being in such a, terrible, perilous state. And so the Franco-American Noir show that we're going to do there August 11th and 12th is an idea, as I was saying, has been kicking around in my mind for years. One American Noir, one French Noir, and this is your opportunity to compare them and, as we like to say, vive la différence between the two national cinemas.
So what have you observed as the difference between French noir and American noir?
Well, I'm going to dodge that question by telling people that they should come and see for themselves. But what I will say is that Hollywood versus the more artisanal type of cinema, production done in France, makes a big difference in terms of exactly how the films play. And the first double bill that we'll be doing on Friday night, the 11th, is, I think, a fantastic example of la différence, because we start with The Postman Always Rings Twice.
Mm-hmm.
James M. Cain double bill, where the same novel is done by two different directors in two different countries. And we start with the American one because people are familiar with it,
mm-hmm.
and because I need to get myself up and running to actually introduce an American noir, which is kind of a new experience for me. But, of course, that one is, I think, pretty well known by people and obviously has a very sexy cast of Lana Turner and John Garfield.
But in her turban.
The French version was made earlier, made 7 years earlier, because the book was so controversial when it came out in 1934 that they couldn't make the film in Hollywood for 12 years. So Pierre Chenal, who I like to think of as the missing link between the beginning of French noir, the poetic realism that followed, and he had an incredible life. He was actually named Pierre Cohen. So when the Nazis invaded in 1940, Pierre Chenal had to leave France.
Mm-hmm.
Reasons I think we all understand.
Yeah.
And didn't come back for quite some time and lived a very nomadic existence. And so, but before he left, he made the first version of Postman Always Rings Twice, which is called Le Dernier Tournant, or The Last Turn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an extremely different version. It's much more faithful to the working class kind of provincial world than what you see in the American version. So I think it'll be a fascinating contrast for people to see the two films back to back.
Well, I have always wondered, why is it called The Postman Always Rings Twice? I've always wondered that.
That's a line from Cain's book, and to be honest with you, I've always been a little mystified because it seems to be some kind of metaphor for what goes on in the story that I always found to be a little over the top and not really necessary given what you're really going for in that story is the bedrock noir stuff of lust and greed,
mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing about Le Dernier Tournant is that the backstory is that Chenal wanted to use a famous actress who played those types of roles, an
mm-hmm.
actress named Vivian Romance,
mm-hmm.
but she turned him down because she'd played too many of those kind of parts in the late 30s. So he found a young teenage actress named Corinne Lucher, who then ultimately had a very tragic life, which I'll tell that story at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But he decided, you remember when they made Double Indemnity and they slapped a blonde wig on Barbara Stanwyck?
Yes.
Right. Well, in this case, Pierre Chenal took the natural blonde Corinne Lucher and slapped a black wig on her head because he wanted her to look like Vivian Romance. And so she did, but she gave a totally different performance because she was coming from a teenage intensity for playing the role of Cora,
mm-hmm.
much different than what Lana Turner does, and it's a fascinating contrast.
Mm.
So I think it'll really, really sort of drive the point home of just how the two national cinemas differ in how they treat film noir right out of the box. So I hope that people will be, intrigued by that, and we follow that up on Saturday afternoon with a film that I am still kind of surprised that Eddie Muller has not shown again, because he has been such an advocate of this film. It is
mm-hmm.
such an unrelenting B-noir called Decoy,
mm-hmm.
with probably the nastiest femme fatale of all, played by an English actress named Jean Gilley. It is an amazing film. Eddie showed it in his very early noir cities,
mm-hmm.
But it sort of disappeared off the radar for a long time, and so we're really pleased to pair that up with a film that we showed about 5 years ago, where we showcased a young actress named Andrée Clément, who also, like Jean Gilley, died young and left us only with very few examples of their tremendous acting ability. And she plays a part called La Fille du Diable,
mm-hmm.
Which translates to The Devil's Daughter. So you have quite a double bill of these two actresses giving you women on the edge in ways that have to be seen to be believed.
Wow. So that's all happening August 11th and 12th?
11th and 12th. We have three double bills.
Okay.
We've described Postman and Le Dernier Tournant on Friday night.
Yes.
Saturday afternoon, we have Decoy with La Fille du Diable, or The Devil's Daughter.
Yeah.
And to close it out on Saturday evening, the 12th, we have the big combo, with John Alton's great cinematography and the incredible performance by Richard Conte as the sociopath, with Cornel Wilde as the cop who is almost willing to be as bad as Conte in order to bring him in.
Okay.
The double bill is built around the idea that there's a disturbing subtext in noir. Are the cops really any better than the criminals they chase?
Right, right.
And so we follow that up with a film, another film later in Pierre Chenal's career, after his second return to France in the late 50s, called Raffles sur la Vie, or Sinners of Paris, where a young Michel Piccoli puts his partner in harm's way because he's decided that he wants to take his wife away from him while they're chasing a gangster on the run. It's quite an interesting film, and makes for an interesting contrast between the two types of bad men, you know, toxic male characters that float around. So we have toxic femininity in the afternoon and toxic masculinity in the evening.
To balance it out, of course.
Say again?
To balance it out.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Equal time for yeah. equal bad people. That's correct.
So how did you come to love French noir?
Well, when I was working with the Film Noir Foundation and editing the e-zine, we did a lot of research, and we discovered that these films, the films that we showed in the French Art and Import series at the Roxy starting in 2014, they had disappeared off the radar. And so we found them, and as we watched them, we were just astonished at how good they were and how many of them there were. And so between 2014 and 2019, we showed 101 rare French noirs in 5 years at the Roxy, and we're continuing on. We'll have shows, another French noir show, right after Thanksgiving and into December. And I should also mention that we're planning two more shows at the Four Star for Franco-American noir, one in mid-October and another one in the 1st and 2nd of December. We aren't releasing the information about those films yet in hopes that we can come back and talk to you about those at a later date.
Okay, okay. So you've got these six films that you're going to be showing, but for people who, now that you've piqued their interest, let's say you're someone who's hearing about Franco-American noir for the first time, or French noir for the first time, they know that these movies exist, but they want to know about other movies, so can they go to your website and find out more about movies? Is there a book that you would recommend that would talk about these movies? How would they go about finding more and being able to track them down?
Well,
you know,
I've been working on a book about this for some time, and it's a daunting thing because there's 600 of these films that need to be talked about. So you're really talking about writing an encyclopedia.
Okay.
At the website, we do have a listing of the films that we've screened over that period of time, and you know, it's the kind of thing where, it's just going to be a situation where if you come and see these side by side, you'll get intrigued. Mm-hmm. And then when we got you, we'll definitely help them do that. I do have an article up at the Bright Lights Film Journal website called The Big Sigh, which is an overview of French film noir. And that, I think, is something that if people are interested in looking at, they would get a pretty interesting sense of my take on French film noir history, which is a little bit different from what exists elsewhere. I do want to make sure that we get a little bit of time to talk about the other show that we're doing at the Roxy.
Go ahead.
With international noir, which is called A Rare Noir is Good to Find. It's the third incarnation. It starts on Sunday the 13th, so right after Franco-American noir, we will move over to the Roxy, and we will show 13 films from various countries, none of them being France, of which 9 of these films are so rare they have yet to be shown in America until we show them at the Roxy on the 13th, the 19th, and the 20th.
Okay.
We begin in Mexico with a film that has been shown. It's one of the few films of the Mexican noir grouping that Eddie Muller has yet to show. It's called Aventurera, and it has an actress named Ninon Sevilla, who is just incredible. It's just an amazing way to start the show. We then move to Spain, to Italy, to Germany, Austria, and two films in Greece, mm-hmm. and then on the final day, we take you to Norway for two films.
Wow.
We have two great films from an actor from Japan named Tatsuya Nakadai, where he plays completely different kinds of characters. The second of which is one that we actually showed in 2017 in our second Rare Noir is Good to Find show.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good, I wanted to show it again because it hasn't gotten screened since. It is a wonderful film called Cash Calls Hell. That's not breaking our law about swearing, I hope.
It is not.
And that's followed up by a fantastic film from Brazil called Assault on the Pay Train, Favela Noir, a true story about a group from the slums who put a heist on and then try to get away with it. It's an incredible lineup of films, and it's, you know, something we've been wanting to get back to for a long time, but obviously the pandemic, you know, was sort of a monkey wrench in our plans
sure.
for a number of the things we wanted to do for several years. But finally, we've been able to put it on, and it will be another film club extravaganza at the Roxy as a follow-on. So I'll get a chance to come back and spend a couple of weeks in San Francisco for the first time in quite some time, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Excellent. So for our listening audience, August 11th and 12th is happening at the Four Star Theater, and then the 13th and what were the other dates? The 19th,
the 19th and 20th, right. Saturday and Sunday of the following weekend. We have four films on the 13th, four on the 19th, and five for our marathon fans on the 20th. 13 films, as I said, nine of them are so rare that they've never been screened in America before.
And that's happening.
Amazing. How do we do it?
I don't know. Those are all happening at the Roxy. So how do
those are at the Roxy.
How do people get tickets?
Well, the Roxy, we are selling passes right now. When the passes are finished selling later in this week, they will go directly on sale. The remaining seats will be on sale through the Roxy site.
So is that, what is that, Roxy, the Roxy or Roxy?
Roxy.com.
Okay.
Yes.
And if people want to...
They can get information at midcenturyproductions.com as well. All that information is up there and people can see it now. I think they'll go live probably Wednesday or Thursday for remaining seats for Rare Noir is Good to Find. And of course, you can get tickets for the two shows at the Four Star by going to the Four Star website or cinemasf.com, I believe, and
mm-hmm.
that will get you there. I think I'm just so excited to be able to do two shows like this back to back. It's it keeps me young.
And so, just one more time, give us the website for Franco-American Noir and the website for A Rare Noir is Good to Find.
Franco-American Noir, you can get information at our site, midcenturyproductions.com. You can buy tickets at fourstar.com. Roxy.com is your source for remaining seats going on sale later in the week for Rare Noir is Good to Find. If people are interested, send them to substack.com for Don Malcolm, and we will have information for them if we have any passes remaining for the full festival passes that are currently on sale.
All right. Well, Don Malcolm, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's always great to talk with you, Marilyn. Best of luck with everything, and we hope to talk to you again maybe in November when we're getting set up for French Had a Name for a 23.
I like it. I like it. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. You can go check out the French Noir. I mean, you're going to just be so happy doing something that touches your mind. So there it is. There it is.
Et maintenant, sur scène, les triplettes de Belleville.
Musicas and Ascoltam Eso Esic. I thought it was raining. That is from an old, old, old record, Prisoner's Song. Before that, Ben Charest and Cabaret Hoover from the Triplets of Belleville. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. It is the last Monday of the month, and you know what that means, my friends. It's my librarianista du jour talking to you about all the fun things that can be had at the San Francisco Public Library. My librarianista du jour is Kirsty Harless. How you doing?
Hi, Daisy and Marilyn. I'm great. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about what you do at the San Francisco Public Library.
So in May, I recently got a job at the Magazines and Newspaper Center. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was in the business department. But in May, I got promoted and am now in charge of the Magazines and Newspaper Center, and it's fabulous.
So I know there are probably not a whole lot of listeners who really know about the magazines and newspaper section. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's very unusual because it's pretty rare to find so many magazines and newspapers under one roof. And so the library has subscriptions to over 1,000 magazines, mm-hmm. And dozens of newspapers. We also have online magazines and newspapers, and we also have newspapers on microform.
Microform?
Yeah, that's microfiche and microfilm.
Oh, okay.
For example, we have the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Francisco Examiner, the New York Times, going back to the 1800s.
Wow. So if someone is looking for an article going back that far, how do you even find stuff?
Well, we just do a reference interview with a patron, and we jot down some keywords, and then we go to the appropriate newspaper. We sort by date. We can look up keywords such as the person that the patron is looking for or the subject. And it's pretty straightforward. Just on Saturday, I was helping someone who had just watched the documentary about Arthur Ashe, and mm-hmm. She wanted to find the source article that the documentary had mentioned, and it was a New York Times article from 1975. And within a minute or two, we found it, and she was absolutely thrilled.
Wow, that's crazy. So, like, how available is all of this stuff to just an average library patron?
Well, all the patron really needs is their library card number and PIN number. If they're going to do the research at home, they would just go to sfpl.org/enews, mm-hmm. and they would see a whole list of resources, including the magazines and the newspapers, and they would just need to type in their library card number and PIN number to access that. They can also come to the main library and go to the fifth floor. That's mm-hmm. where the magazines and newspaper center is. Mm-hmm. And one of the librarians can help the patron. And I must say, one of the strengths and one of the great things about the magazines and newspaper center is its staff. The librarians have been doing this work for many, many years. They're so smart and so good at finding things. We also have great staff in the back who maintain this incredible collection of back issues and bound volumes. Mm-hmm. So if someone were really interested in digging in, they could just come to the main library and go up to the fifth floor and we can help them.
So do you get a lot of researchers coming through that department?
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of people who are writers. There are people who are studying their family histories, doing genealogical research. A lot of historians have come by over the years. Mm-hmm. But we have, like, regular people coming in. One frequent request that's kind of fun is people will often request the front page of either the Chronicle or the New York Times for the day that someone important to them was born.
Mm, yes.
And that actually happened a couple of years ago. Actually, a famous person, a movie star, came in and did that exact request.
Oh, who was the movie star?
It was Ed Norton.
Oh, wow. Ed Norton knew about the San Francisco Public Library?
Yes, and it's funny because I wasn't working in that department at the time, but the librarian who was helping Ed Norton didn't recognize him and didn't know that he was a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
But he helped him as usual and found the front page of the New York Times for Ed Norton. Ed Norton was planning to give that to his father as a gift.
Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah, and so after he left, that's when the librarian realized, or he was told by his colleagues, that that was Ed Norton. So it's pretty exciting.
That's awesome. So in the library, in the magazine and newspaper section, is there something, is there a feature about it that people maybe don't know about that you might want to raise awareness of?
Well, I think it's just the scope and how far back a lot of these holdings go. I mean, we have, we have over 6,000 titles in the collection.
What?
I'll repeat that. It's 6,000 titles. A lot of them have ceased, but we still have an archive. We have over 1,000 current subscriptions, and that includes popular magazines like, you know, Rolling Stone or Us Weekly, but it also includes like trade journals and scholarly journals. So it's just, I think the sheer number of titles that patrons can access through the library, and also like how far back they go, because typically you can't find either in print or online like back issues going that far back. It's pretty incredible.
That's true. And do you find that it's harder to manage the collection now that so many news and magazine things have moved online?
Well, it's just a constantly changing landscape. Yeah, it's true. Unfortunately, we do hear back that certain magazines have ceased publication. And it's a real bummer because, you know, these are really good newspapers and really good magazines. It's just constantly changing. And that's one thing that's very different from the work I used to do on the fourth floor, you know, with business. I was, you know, working with books. With magazines and newspapers are a completely different kind of resource.
Mm-hmm.
They're also different. And so, yeah, it's just constantly changing. But again, our staff is so good, and everything's well organized, and we can help people find anything they would need.
Okay. And then I used my library card to access the New York Times. Is that something that is particular to the New York Times, or are there other publications where you can just use your library card to read the entire publication online?
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, the New York Times is definitely available with your library card. But it's also the Chronicle, and also I wanted to mention Flipster and PressReader. So those are two magazine online platforms that also have apps. And there are hundreds of magazines available in these platforms. Like, oh, there's so many. Like Consumer Reports is a very popular one, and that's available in Flipster. In PressReader, there's a ton of international magazines. So for example, if you wanted to read French Vogue, that's in there. There's so many. So again, that's Flipster and PressReader, and that's for full text, full color page magazines that you could download to your device, like it could be an iPad or your phone, and you could read them. You could even read them offline. You just need to download them when you do have an internet connection.
See, I didn't know about either of those things, so now I'm going to be on top of that. Thank you so much. And is there any other thing that our listening audience might not be aware of that you want to make sure that they're aware of?
Well, I have a program coming up on August 10th, and I'd like to invite your audience to tune in if they're interested. It's going to be a virtual program, so they would just need Zoom to attend.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a program called Plan Your Next Adventure Using Magazines and Newspapers. And so I don't know if you realize or know that this summer, this library celebrates Summer Stride, and we encourage people to, you know, read, learn something new, and get out and explore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that I would show people how to use magazines and newspapers to explore places to go in the Bay Area. And so I put that together, and also I've invited a travel writer to join me in conversation. And that's what he does. He's a writer who focuses on travel, mm-hmm. and he's going to talk about his work and also some of his favorite places to visit in the Bay Area.
That's very cool. When is that again, and how do they sign up to watch it?
Thank you. So it's on Thursday, August 10th. It's from 1 o'clock to 2. There's a link on the sfpl.org web calendar page for the event. If the person can go to sfpl.org/events, mm-hmm. and there's a whole list of events, and they can click on August 10th on the calendar, and they'll see it. I think it's on the second page. And it's, again, it's called Plan Your Next Adventure Using Magazines and Newspapers. And there's a link to click on to register.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Kirstie Harless, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Excellent. People of Earth, you heard what the lady said about all of the places where you can, or all of the apps that you can use to access things from the San Francisco Public Library, access newspapers and magazines. So keep that in your head and do it, do it, do it. It's just about time for me to ride off into the sunset. Want to remind you that the San Francisco Drag King annual Drag King competition is happening this Sunday, the Oasis. So that's going on. You can visit their website, at the Oasis, and have a good time. Enjoy your life. Touch your mind. Going to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford. It'll be pleasuring your ear hole. Until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
We're my men, but I have to mark on my own. We're my men.